¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned into the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get into the retread versus first year in just a moment. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Willie wants to get in here on the Cal conversation, though. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Willie, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Willie?
Hello, how y'all doing? Man, I enjoy y'all's show, and y'all took the word right out of my mouth. I don't care. When Cal Manek said he was going to have input on the next head coach, I don't know if that's good or bad. Because I don't think him or Cancero really know what they're doing. Until he gets somebody in here that know what they're doing to run this organization, this team's going to forever be dysfunctional. And if Payton come here, he's going to want more control in which he needs, because these people here don't know what they're doing. I hate to use this word, but Cal McNair, I think, is really, when it comes to football, is dumb. I don't think he learned nothing from his daddy. I mean, his daddy turning over in his grave with some of the things that's going on with this football team. And I just hang up and listen.
Thanks, Willie. Appreciate the call, man.
What did we used to call that segment? It wasn't a segment, but we would always give out the gift card to Freddy's.
Frankie's Friday Fire?
Yeah. Yeah.
Frankie,
yeah. If we were still doing that, Willie would get it. Yeah. That was fire from Willie. I appreciate the call, Willie. Yeah, I hate saying words like that too. I hate saying the word dumb whenever we talk about Cal McNair. I hate saying the word buffoon.
I learned when we talk about Cal McNair. Was not what I thought it was in my own house.
Stupid. Yep. I hate using that word whenever I'm talking about Cal McNair.
That is the S word that the teachers at my daughter's schools said is not something that we say. So I learned that what I thought it was is different, and that it's actually don't say stupid.
Idiot. I hate using that word when talking about Cal. Moron.
I said to her teacher, what about dumbass? No, I did not, but maybe it dumbass
me
is more appropriate.
Did. I know. What else? Dummy? Don't like. Well, I guess that was the word that he said.
Incompetent?
Incompetent, yeah. I hate saying all those words whenever we describe Cal McNair.
OG?
I couldn't believe that, man. Like, I really couldn't. And I know that it's kind of like old news, but yeah, Cal's going to be, I'm going to be more involved in this coaching search. How do you take that as a good thing? And to Willie's point, like, do we trust Nick Caserio? I think it's a very valid conversation. I think it's a valid argument. I think it's an argument that you can have, and I know a lot of our listeners don't like Caserio. They think Caserio should have been fired, too. I see both sides of it. I would have kept Caserio, just for the record. But you have to trust Caserio more than Cal. And if Cal's to the point, here's another thing. If Cal's to the point where Cal thinks he trusts Cal more than Nick, that tells you all you need to know about Nick. It tells you that you need a new general manager. If Cal McNair thinks Cal McNair knows more about Nick Caserio, you need a new GM.
So here's the thing. In my own experiences, unless it dealt with like big financial decisions, this is exactly why Daryl Morey was so right for Les Alexander, wrong for Tillman Fertitta. But Les had his finger on the pulse of a lot of what was going on in the NBA. But he also knew when to get out of the way. When Daryl was in the middle of trade talks, when Daryl was trying to do things like the fact that Les didn't like to spend a whole lot of money sometimes, but when Daryl let him know, like, this is the difference maker between getting a free agent to come here and not come here, and Les was like, well, I want my basketball team to be the best. So you do whatever you think we have to do so that we are at the top of the list to get whoever we need to get to. That's because you respected the general manager and his opinion enough to listen. Yep. That's why I keep going back to this with Caserio. In the Patriot Way days, you had to know the right way to do this. You had to have access to the plane. You had to have an unlimited charge card budget to do whatever you needed to do to woo whoever you needed to woo to get whoever you wanted to get to. If you don't know how to get through to Cal to explain him this is the way that business is done in the NFL or this is the way we get what we want, then you got the wrong guy.
Vera on Twitch.tv/ESPN975 says, do we trust Caserio? Depends on what. As a personnel draft analysis, sure. For hiring a head coach, not totally, needs oversight. Fair point. I don't want Cal McNair providing that oversight. Like, Cal McNair should never be involved in the decisions of the 53-man roster. He shouldn't be involved in the decision of the general manager. He shouldn't be involved in the decision of head coach. And if you're saying, well, then who is? Like, who would be that guy? If Cal McNair, let's assume Cal McNair fired Nick Caserio whenever he fired Lovie Smith, right? So now there's not really a football guy in the room. You got the president, Gressom, whatever, but there's not really a football guy in the room. You don't have a head coach. You don't have a general manager. Who do you go to? Like, in that situation, because Cal McNair should not be making that call ever. Cal McNair needs to talk to the football people he trusts. I would rather have Gary Kubiak make that call. I would rather have Andre Johnson make that call. I'd rather have Jonathan Joseph make that call. So Cal McNair, if he's ever in a situation like that, he's going to have to rely on other people because he shouldn't trust himself. But while you have a general manager in place, you have to commit. You have to go all in. You can't all of a sudden be riding this little like power trip over your general manager when you know nothing. Like, Sean Payton is probably calling the Houston Texans dysfunctional because of Cal McNair.
See, here's the thing. I also think that, to the caller's point, and also one of the reasons why I think, in a way, Caserio said what he did at the press conference about if the right guy comes in and it means me stepping aside, I'm willing to step aside. Because maybe Nick knows himself he can't get through to this owner. He can't get done what he needs to get done and get this owner to buy on, be on board and buy into whatever he's trying to sell. And maybe a guy like Sean Payton can. Maybe you get a guy and you go back, and I heard Paulie talking about the list of guys and the Belichicks and the Parcells and the guys like that. But when you get that big of a power hitter that could come into your franchise and be that big of a difference maker, well, then you give him the keys to the car and you get the hell out of the way. And maybe it takes someone like that. If the general manager can't do it, then the coach can. Because if he knows how much he's paying him, and that's going to be one thing that makes him take notice. But then when you realize he comes with the clout and the resume to say, hey, look, this is how we're doing things if we truly want to turn this thing around. If you want to stop being the laughingstock of the NFL and ass bottom of the entire, you know, standings, then you got to trust me that I know what I'm doing, and this is why you're paying me this much money. Yeah. And Nick doesn't have that kind of clout, and Nick didn't have that resume. And Nick probably understands now I can't get through to this guy to do the things I need to do. Maybe Sean Payton can.
It's potentially backfiring on him, though. Like, it's potentially backfiring. Because if Sean Payton doesn't take another interview with the Houston Texans, and he told his buddy, Colin Cowherd, that the Texans ownership group is dysfunctional, all of a sudden that hope we had going into the offseason's gone, because you can't escape bad ownership. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go back out there for Kevin. Kevin, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Kevin?
Good afternoon, guys. Let me say this. I am a native Houstonian. I was an Oilers fan. Of course, you know, with the exception of the Texans, with the incorporation of the Texans coming to the NFL, I supported them the first year. But I have not been a Texans fan for years, and it is because of the McNairs. Yes, the father was a good guy, a great humanitarian, but this son, just how he has done things since his incorporation as an owner, it just so many red flags. And I think they're going to botch this head coaching search again. Gannon is going to be the head coach. And I just think, again, over time, you look at the things that the Cal has done, it just raises red flags to suggest, does this guy know exactly what he is doing? Thank you, guys. I am enjoying the show as always.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Kevin. I mean, you could go item by item on the dysfunction of this organization, right? Easterby, O'Brien, total control, Hopkins trade, Laremy Tunsil trade. Did I mention Easterby yet? Deshaun Watson demanding a trade before the sexual misconduct stuff.
Because you
were dysfunctional. You invite Deshaun Watson to dinner. You ask him for who he thinks should be the head coach. You're like, you know, basically keeping him in the loop, asking him for his input, and then you ignore him, which is weird. Like, just don't invite him to dinner. Like, right. If you're not going to listen to Deshaun Watson, just don't invite Deshaun Watson to dinner and get his insight. That's weird. They kind of got saved, though, because of what happened afterwards with Deshaun Watson. It saved the trade demand. It saved the fact that, you know, they had the dinner and didn't listen to him because they were having rallies on Kirby, you know, defending Deshaun ahead of ownership before the sexual misconduct stuff came out. David Culley, Lovie Smith, jury still out on Nick Caserio. How this coaching search is going, it's still probably too early to tell, but dysfunction, 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 dysfunction. And now potentially Sean Payton's telling Colin Cowherd that you can tell dysfunction in a Zoom meeting. People are putting two and two together and saying, well, yeah, it's talking about the Houston Texans. And people are acting surprised that it could potentially be the Houston Texans. Oh, Colin Cowherd's lying. He's a hot take artist. He's making this up. Everything is telling you that the Texans have been dysfunctional before. All of a sudden, that's gone. And I feel kind of embarrassed, to be honest with you, because King of Twitch just brings up the point. He's like, yeah, sorry, the Texans are incompetent. Look, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. That's where I'm at. Maybe that's why I'm fired up, because I bought into this offseason for the Texans to bring back hope, and we're seeing it play out. That hope is disappearing right before our eyes.
Yeah, look, I think that in the past, when we talked about this, there was everybody had their boiling point, which made them jump off the bandwagon. And some of it was back to Bill O'Brien. And then it was Jack Easterby. And then it was Cal and the multiple coaches and Caserio and up and down the list. But everybody has gotten to that point, and then when just, I can't take any more, jumping off the ledge. Now it seems like in the offseason they're trying to focus on, hey, we finally get it. It took us this long and we've been this rock-headed, but we finally understand we're going to do it differently this time because we want you back. Because Cal finally saw the bottom line and he realized how big of a hit he can take and how big of an impact it can have when you are buffoons trying to run a professional sports franchise. Now, when you start believing again and you say all the things that we said about this offseason so far, about all the things they're trying to do to get you back, in one fall swoop, they're basically back to square one again because people see what's going on. They understand first and foremost that you can't just manipulate me through a couple of press conferences and quotes and appearances on radio shows and get me to get a 100% buy-in.
You get some of it, though.
But I'm willing to listen, right?
He fools some people.
But now I'm listening to other people that know people involved in the process, and now I have no reason to believe that anything's changed. Like, again, it's just like Korn Ferry for business. Now, Korn Ferry's giving you all this high-paid advice, and you're doing your best to stick to the outline. But, oh, by the way, someone that you've met with that doesn't have an outline just decided to blow the whistle and say, this place is screwed up.
He became more involved. That's what happened then. And look, the Korn Ferry list wasn't great. Like, let's not pretend that it was. But they committed to the Korn Ferry. Somebody didn't like what they saw on the Korn Ferry, and then Cal McNair got more involved. Great, so maybe he was influenced.
I think in a lot of ways the list could have been a lot better than Caserio.
I think Shad Khan's the only, not Shad Khan, the
Pittsburgh Khan Steelers Pittsburgh. Guy.
I think he's the only guy that's a GM in the NFL right now. So the list wasn't great.
Okay. Seven, I mean, look, I'm intrigued by Riddick. I would have liked to have seen what he could do with context.
Riddick thought that Clyde Edwards-Helaire was going to win an MVP his rookie year, and he had a take a couple of weeks ago that was abysmal. I have zero interest in Riddick.
Nick Caserio swung and missed quite a bit, too. But at least with his involvement in different football operations departments with different roles, I would trust that he knows how to run a functional, serviceable football operations.
A lot of people want to get in on this. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Are you buying what Cowherd said? Are you buying what the Texans said? Is it a bunch of BS? Cal McNair should be hidden, right? He shouldn't be more involved, right? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Eric the Driver says it's a bunch of BS, the franchise, not what Cowherd said. I think what Cowherd said was more than likely true. I feel very comfortable saying what Colin Cowherd said. He got firsthand from Sean Payton at the dinner they were out the night before, and he was talking about the Texans. I'm like 90% sure. Like I feel safe saying that. Where are you at on that?
I don't know, man. I'm gonna hold. I'm in a hold mode.
So you think Coward made that up?
No, I believe that Coward. Look, I've been in enough of those conversations. I believe there's a lot of legitimacy to what Coward said, but I want to believe, from my heart of hearts, and I don't care what we do for a living. Uh-huh. I want to believe that they didn't screw this up again, right? That they didn't trip over themselves yet again after all the missteps they have. I want to believe that there might be someone else that he's talked to. I want to believe that maybe there hasn't been, and I don't know what the rules and stipulations are, but I want to believe that maybe there was a conversation that happened somewhere at some point, just like a precursor to an actual official interview, to where you're just trying to get the pulse of some other team. I hope that's the case.
But I also,
in my heart of hearts, have enough skins on the wall in terms of going through these kind of things to say, you and I were on the same page before we even started putting this rundown together today or started the show today, that I started kind of crossing the T's and dotting the I's and going, well, he likes Carolina. He likes Denver. Who is he met with? Who isn't he met with? And then when you just kind of decipher the quotes from Cowherd, it's pretty easy to point the finger in one direction.
He's talking about a team.
Yeah.
Like, who could it be?
Well, he starts out by saying, well, because remember, because he finishes by saying there's the have and the have nots, and that's not just quarterbacks. That could be ownerships, too. And so
and
he tries
tell
to generalize it at
Zoom.
The end, but yeah.
You can tell dysfunction
90% of it is pointed in one direction.
And Peyton's talked to one dude versus Zoom.
Go optimism
and all that stuff. That's fantastic. Like, it's great. I hope you're right. Even if you go with that optimism, the Texans still wouldn't wait a day to go court him and had a Zoom meeting with Sean Payton. That's embarrassing.
This.
Like, Mr. Cortez, honestly, at this point, I don't know what would make you want to watch the team. It's one thing sticking to your team through tough times, but this is just on another level of horrible. Team is going nowhere at this point. And that's what's frustrating is because there's like an avenue to get back to prominence. Two first-round draft picks this year and next. Cap space. You get the head coaching spot right. There is a path to prominence. But you can't escape bad ownership.
Can I
can't
ask you
do
this?
It.
Just in the as we're trying to hypothetically figure out how the situation went, why wouldn't the Zoom chat be either predominantly or dominantly Nick Caserio? Why would you be sitting down with Cal McNair?
Because Cal McNair wants to be more involved, and people celebrated that.
Now I could see them both sitting in a room, but like I would say that later on down the line, if there was a second interview or whatever, that maybe then you would have a more formal sit down with Cal.
Uh-huh.
But in the early stages, this is about your smartest football guy talking to a really smart football guy that you want to lure in, and especially knowing what you're dealing with the ownership group. Why the hell was he even prominently in the Zoom chat?
That's what I'm telling you. He needs to be a silent owner. He doesn't need to be more involved. I cringe whenever I heard that.
Yeah, I hear you.
So cringe when I heard that. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out there to Logan. Logan, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Logan?
Yeah, so I was listening to the bench a couple days ago, and they were talking about C.J. Stroud and, like, his PFF numbers, and they really impressed me. But I don't see the point in drafting a quarterback with our number two pick if we don't have an offensive-minded head coach to develop him. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for the call, Logan. And we've gone back and forth on this. And we've heard a Mike Tannenbaum say that when you have a leader of men, and it doesn't matter if you're an offensive or a defensive guy, and he's seen plenty of defensive guys that have had that kind of success and developed offensive quarterbacks, and he mentioned Belichick's and Parcells of the world and guys like that. I am of the belief that especially with the situation that as it lies for the Houston Texans, that you need an offensive-minded head coach. That's why I don't want to consider, and when we do these lists about who we'd like to see, I don't have a defensive-minded guy in my top three because I think it's so hyper-important that whoever you zero in on at quarterback has to be developed by two really smart offensive minds, an offensive coordinator and a head coach. Other people differ, but that's my personal belief, and that's why if you're going to go defensive coach, I think you and I have both talked about that too, that if you do go defensive coach, there's a good chance that you don't go quarterback in the first two picks of the first round.
I'm with Kevin, especially in this draft, that if you're going to go quarterback with the first two, you can make the case for the first two quarterbacks that if they go 1-2, that best player available did not go. The top two best players available did not go. I think it's very fair to say the best two players in this draft are Will Anderson and Jalen Carter. Some people would say that. Some people might have Bryce Young thrown in the mix. Some people might have Will Levis thrown in the mix, as much as people don't want to believe that. But if you go defensive, if you go defensive-minded coach, like if it's D'Amico Ryans, if D'Amico Ryans is your head coach, I think part of the plan to entice him to come to the Texans is that you give him the second pick. Quite frankly, I'd be excited about D'Amico Ryans. I would maybe stop thinking about dysfunction with this organization just a little bit if they hired D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans can still kind of save the day for the Houston Texans. But if you bring in that defensive-minded coach, like D'Amico's going to go from having one of the best defensive rosters in the NFL to a defensive roster that has a lot of holes and is very, very young. Do I think that there's players on that defense that can start for a few NFL teams? Yeah, Christian Harris could, Jalen Petrie could, Derek Stingley when healthy could, Malik Collins could, but that's not a dominant defense. And D'Amico Ryans has had a dominant defense. So if you're bringing in that dude, he probably needs some players, and he probably needs some players early in the draft. Plus, because Will Anderson and Jalen Carter are so good, there's not necessarily a clear-cut 1-2 quarterback. It's not a Manning, Ryan Leaf draft, even though Ryan Leaf was a bust. I know there's good quarterbacks at that, you know, at the top of the draft, whether it's Bryce Young, whether it's Will Levis, whether it's C.J. Stroud. You can easily go defensive player there. The problem with that, though, is at some point you feel like you have to get your quarterback if you believe you need a quarterback in the NFL.
And the cupboard,
and I would argue that you need quarterback in the NFL.
And the cupboard for next year is almost bare. Because I don't think that you're going to see Davis Mills want to take a demotion. And
he's got no choice, though. Like, what are you going to do? What's he going to do? He's going to demand
a
trade?
For a trade.
Cool.
He's going to ask for a trade.
So
right?
What?
But I'm just saying. But you need quarterbacks.
I don't think he's going to demand a trade, by the way, for the record.
Okay, but you need quarterbacks regardless.
Yeah, you do.
Right? And you've seen all that you need to see of Davis Mills as a starter. So you've got to find a starting quarterback. So whether you do it in the draft or you go out and find a veteran some way, somehow, free agency or otherwise in a retread, then you're going to do that. And you have to make sure you've got quarterbacks on the roster that are capable in the room for the entire season. So you got to find somebody somewhere, at least one, probably two, because you know that Kyle Allen's not the answer either. So you're going to have to identify that, but you don't have to do it in the draft. But you damn well better have a really good plan if you don't. Because you do have to, once again, recycle pretty much the entire room.
I have a path to getting a quarterback that's not in the first round, but it only involves a defensive coach. I agree to Kevin's point. If you go quarterback at two, you better hire an offensive coach. And this is trending like Jonathan Gannon, if we're being completely honest, which scares me. 713-780-ESPN. I hate it, too.
I don't want a defensive-minded guy. I don't want a guy that you were down the road with a year ago that suddenly, because of that, is back in the mix. Yeah. And Vegas has as the leading candidate.
I think he would have been the guy if Kyle didn't say it was Lovie. I don't either. I'm with you. 713-780-3776. Back out to the HRP listener line. Robert, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Robert?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Great.
Love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
My point of view would be that I think Caceres want to be the Bill Belichick of general managers. He's the one that's responsible for all the hires of all the coaches and assistant coaches, which have not panned out well. I think he's still in control. He's too smart to make that comment. The comment at the press conference was just giving everyone what everyone wanted to hear. I think as far as the Zoom, I think what was a turnoff, Cal was probably with his headset playing Fortnite. I'll sit back and listen.
Thanks for the call, Robert.
I would argue, Robert, that that was not what everybody wanted to hear. What everybody wanted to hear
her.
When he said that.
You heard me?
Yeah, I don't think that's what everybody wanted to hear whenever
I agree
he said
with you.
That.
Look, and
Some people did.
I don't think we know who was involved or wasn't involved with especially the second head coach in Lovey, but there's tons of questions that may never be answered as to who was, you know, at the end of the day, who was the one that pulled the trigger and got made the decisions. But we know that going forward, they're trying to do a better job of trying to clearly spell out who's doing what, who's involved in the process. But, you know, to say that Nick's the smartest guy in the room, look, I've dealt with a lot of general managers that thought they were the smartest guy in the room, so much so that Daryl Morey used to pick assistant coaches for a head coach because he thought he was smarter than the head coach that had to develop a camaraderie and a trust with his coaching staff, and it just completely blew up. So, you know, he's tried a lot of things. And the parallels between the Texans and the Rockets continue to go on because we've seen this now. We've heard about it for Caserio, and it was documented. Now it's starting to come out about the Rockets, too. It's like you're not the smartest guy in the room, and no matter what your experience is or the experience you didn't have going in, you have to be realistic in the fact that this isn't going to fly with an entire coaching staff, most of which played in the league and or coached in the league previous to being considered for the job that you're interviewing them for or trying to select them for, and it's not going to fly.
No.
Like the same way that you have to have the trust in the locker room of everybody with the lockers next to you and everybody that puts on a jersey – The management has to be on board. The coaching staff has to be on board. The owner has to be on board.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's get into that conversation. Retread NFL coaches versus first-time NFL head coaches. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, I heard Paulie talking about this earlier on the second most interactive radio talk show.
That's right.
In the city of Houston. Paulie does a great job. He's off to ski on the slope.
Ron Burgundy called while Paulie had just stepped out of the studio. He wants his mustache back.
It's a good-looking mustache. It's a really good looking mustache. Paul was talking about, he took me to task a little bit about my love for Benny Johnson, which quite frankly, I'm still not over, and I can't imagine myself getting over it this calendar year.
Well, I mean, once you've been stuck on Big Johnson, it's tough to get over it.
Benny.
Oh.
Johnson.
Well, we each have
the offensive terminal. Coordinator for the Detroit Lions, who the Texans were interested in. He interviewed for the job. He took his name out of consideration for the job. Along with Carolina and Indianapolis. Took his name out of the hat of all three of those. We know that to be a fact. That is a fact. Not an opinion, a fact. But he talked about how, you know, we fall in love, not just me, but everybody. We fall in love with these coordinators that, you know, they've had a cup of coffee in the league. Benny Johnson's only been an OC for 1 year. Whether it's a Kafka, whether it's a Shane Steichen, whoever. You know, we fall in love with these coordinators. And the coordinators don't necessarily always have, you know, a great success story as head coaches, which is true. Like, I don't disagree with what Paul had to say at all, actually. Where I think Paul didn't finish the thought, though, was that you could say the same thing for retread head coaches. Like, any head coach you hire, there's an element of randomness whether or not it's going to work. And a lot of times it depends on the situation that you inherit. If you walked into the Houston Texans 2 years ago and you weren't David Culley, but you were Sean Payton, maybe you win 5 games instead of 4. If Sean Payton coached this year's team instead of Lovie Smith, maybe you win 5 or 6 games instead of 3. So yeah, coaches do matter. That's obvious. Coaching always matters in every single sport. Some sports more than
baseball, according to most, right?
In terms of like strategy and prep and X's and O's, things like that.
And deciding a win or a loss.
Sure. Sure, I think football is up there. Any sport, professional or college, I think basketball is up there, especially
you about
in college.
Last weekend, the way he manipulated timeouts,
coaching
everything else.
Always matters. Yep. Coaching always matters in every sport. There's like different levels and different degrees of how much it matters to each and every sport. So I'm not at all marginalizing how important a coach is. Mm-hmm. But he said you can't guarantee success of a Ben Johnson, of a Mike Kafka, of a Shane Steichen to come into an organization and have results. You also can't guarantee that success for retread head coaches. You just because you have an Andy Reid who goes to Kansas City and has a marvelous career in Kansas City after he left Philadelphia, just like you had a Bill Belichick who went to New England after a little bit of time in Cleveland, that doesn't guarantee it's going to work for every retread head coach. In fact, we just saw a retread head coach in Houston. We just had Lovie Smith in Houston. There's retreads all throughout the history of the NFL where they would go somewhere for the second trip and they would not have success. I saw a study that said that retread head coaches have slightly more success than first-time head coaches in the NFL, but I would also argue that that's incredibly skewed by the Bill Belichicks of the world, the Andy Reids of the world. So Paul's right. You can't guarantee success for a first-time head coach, but you also can't guarantee success for a retread head coach.
Yeah, no, look, I think the more important thing here, regardless of who's had, you know, oodles of experience and is you know, old school and who are up-and-comers, the fact is the Texans can't swing and miss. They can't be like a lot of other teams that can take a flyer or can put their eggs in the basket of a guy with little to no experience. They've got to do as much due diligence as they possibly can to know as much as they possibly can about everything in the background and the experience of the guys that they're interviewing, because they can't do what they've done 2 years in a row. They can't swing and miss yet again. So they can't take the kind of flyer that other teams can that are looking to find the next Sean McVay or Sean McDermott or, you know, go up and down the list. Kyle Shanahan back in a couple of years ago. So that's why it's different for the Texans if they're doing it right. And we don't know that they are. But if they're doing it right, they can't take the flyer or have a little more risk involved. And they have to try and leave as much to, you know, every stone unturned and as little as possible to the unknown because of the fact that they've screwed up too many times. So that's why I keep saying that, look, from a Peyton standpoint, the only way it really makes sense to me is credibility. It makes because of the fact that they've looked like bumbling idiots for 2 years in a row, because they look like they don't know what they're doing, and at least they're talking to a guy that will take the interview that does. But overall, the thing that really scares me the most is because of their track record that they're going to take a flyer on the wrong guy. They're not going to do enough of their homework to figure out that there is a difference between every single one of these yet-to-be head coaches, and that that it's going to take some digging to figure out. Like we talked to Tannenbaum. It was great insight to know that Tannenbaum worked with Ben Johnson before he got to Detroit in Miami and said, look, he could command a room. Look, he got the attention of his players. He knew what he was doing with the attention to detail. Those are the kind of things the Texans, I hope, are investigating and digging deeper on, but I don't know that they are.
A lot of, like, whenever you go through the process, look, again, I agree with Paul that you can't guarantee success for a Benny Johnson, for a Mike Kafka, for a Shane Steichen, for any of these first-time head coaches that, you know, are having the, have a job for the first time in their NFL career. But you can't guarantee that a retread is also going to have that sort of same success. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. If you go look at this year's playoffs right now, the teams that are still in play in the NFL, you're going to see a healthy dose of first-time head coaches and a healthy dose of retreads. It's why it's completely random. You have Doug Peterson, retread. You have Andy Reid, retread. You have Brian Daboll, who's not a retread. He's a first-time coach. Right. Nick Sirianni with Philadelphia, first-time head coach. Zach Taylor for Cincinnati, first-time head coach. Sean McDermott for Buffalo, first-time head coach. Mike McCarthy for Dallas, a retread. San Francisco with Shanahan, first-time head coach. There's eight teams remaining in the playoffs. The eight head coaches that are remaining in the playoffs, five of them are on their first head coaching job. Three of them are retreads. So, yeah, Paul's right. You can't guarantee success for an OC or DC, the hot up-and-comer that's coming into the NFL or coming, you know, into the head coaching ranks, but you can't guarantee a retread's going to have the success either.
No, look, and look, for every McDermott or every McVay or every Shanahan, there's a Nathaniel Hackett. So, you know what? That's what I'm saying. That's why you have to be not only willing to do your homework, you got to dig a little deeper. You got to get as much intel as you can from as many different sources as you possibly can so that you can make the best, most educated decision you can make. And because you're the Houston Texans, it's imperative that you do as much homework as you possibly can before you actually pull the trigger and make a decision, because you can't afford to be any more egg on your face. There's enough for breakfast and a buffet for a late night with as much egg as you got on your face from the way you screwed up the last 2 years.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 1185, come on. Lovie Smith was not successful his first go-around. I guarantee a successful retread versus first time. Lovie Smith was pretty successful.
He was successful in
first
Chicago.
Time,
Brian Urlacher will be the first to tell you. He won 10 games the year that he was fired, and he shouldn't have been fired because they believed in him and they had success with him.
And his Super Bowl appearance was 4 years before Sean Payton's Super Bowl win. Tom Coughlin won a Super Bowl more recently than Sean Payton won a Super Bowl. Just saying. 713-780-ESPN, 8240. Brandon T., if you draft defense at number two, do you think Will Levis will be around at pick 12? No.
Nope.
Absolutely not.
Nope.
Will Levis will not make it out of.
Will not.
I would make a bet right now he does not make it out of the top 10. I would bet a lot of money on that. And I don't think he's going to make it out of the top 5.
I would agree with that as well.
When it's all said and done. 713-780-ESPN. Rockets lost basketball yesterday. What is the streak up to? It's up to a dozen
12.
Now. 12 in a row that the Rockets have lost. But some bright spots? Bright spots with the Rockets? Are we seeing development with the Houston Rockets? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, another word for Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Best Italian food in the city, bar none. And I know they're a little bit on the outskirts. It's a little bit of a drive for you on the north side, but it's worth it because the food is all made from scratch with fresh ingredients, and it is the best Italian food you're going to find. Chris Smith, the owner, also the chef, makes everything in the kitchen and makes sure that he gets the cheese from Wisconsin and all the produce from local farms, and makes sure that he gets all the beef from in-state. He makes sure that everything is there for you. It's fresh. It's ready to go. And then he prepares it with love so that you get the best meal you possibly can. And it's a great environment. It's double the space of the old location, only a mile away from the old location in the Richmond, Katy, Sugarland area. It is truly in your wheelhouse. But basically what I'm trying to tell you is you can take your family. It doesn't matter which fork you use and what you're wearing. It's all about the food and the environment for you to have a great experience. That's what Chris focuses on, making sure the customers are happy, making sure that they are fed and they leave full. It's fantastic. Now they got Dino's Bar named after Dean Martin. I don't know if you know this, but Frankie's Italian Kitchen is Frank Sinatra. That's who he named the restaurant after. And he's got a ton of great artwork and pictures as well around the place. But you feel at home when you're sitting there and you love the food that you're tasting. It's absolutely extraordinary. The lunch menu offered from 11 o'clock to 4, 7 days a week, even on the weekends. You want to know what's on the menu? Go to frankiesitaliankitchentx.com because there's always specials and there's always great food. They're also going to start doing weekend brunches. They're going to do a lot of other things. But the main thing you need to do is check the website and get there as soon as you can. The new location, just a little over a mile away from the old location, north side of FM 1093 between Spring Green and FM 1463, essentially right off Highway 99 within a mile. You'll be there, and you will be ready to experience the best Italian food in the city. Check them out for NFL weekend for the playoffs. 8 great TVs in Dino's Bar, but you're going to love it. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. OG says that Sean Payton is not a retread.
Because he's an idiot. He's off his rocker. He doesn't have any other furniture.
He's not a retread because he quit. He wasn't fired. That's not a retread. A retread is somebody who goes to their second head coaching job.
Sorry, OG. Yeah. In a different zip code.
I just saw that.
I saw it, and that's why I didn't think it was even worth mentioning. And then you brought it up, and I'm like, here we go. He's getting run for being delusional.
Yeah, that's clueless. Quite the comment that Sean Payton apparently is not a retread. What would you describe him as, though? If he's not a retread.
A visor-wearing head coach.
He's not a first-time head coach. What is he?
Experienced.
What is Sean Payton? Do we even know Sean Payton's real? Do we know that Sean Payton's real? Do we know that? He's not a retread.
We don't know who OG is, except for how really idiotic his comments
are. Oh, man, that was good. That actually made my day. Rockets lost basketball yesterday. Yep. 12 straight loss for the Houston Rockets. Breaking Bad was there. Didn't break the bad the Rockets have been at. Callum McNair, I didn't know he was there. Cal and Hannah were there. Just getting some street cred there as they're at the Toyota Center. Now, Jalen Green, mm-hmm. let's try to spin a little bit of positive.
Give credit where credit's due.
Let's try to spin a little positive here because the Rockets are struggling. The Rockets need a little bit of help. They need a little bit of positivity. Are we seeing development with these Rockets? Jalen Green, now he shot the heck out of the ball yesterday, 16 for 24, but he had a 41-point game, even dished out 7 assists, grabbed 5 boards. Şengün had a 24-12-6 game. Young guys look pretty good. Not so much Jabari. But Jalen Green looked good. Alpi Şengün looked very good. Are we seeing some development from the Houston Rockets?
No, you're not. You're seeing a couple guys that...
positivity lasted 15
occasionally,
seconds.
Well, look, there's development in Şengün, but even Şengün's comments after the game tell you that you're not seeing the development you need to see. Effort, defensive side of the basketball, those kind of things. Just lending
it's
more fuel to the fire. Oh, stop.
It's not. Here's the he thing. Struggled. I watched the interview.
I did too, and I keep telling you. The fact is, this guy is continuing to get better while the team's getting worse. But the fact is, even he knows the team's getting worse. They're just not doing the little things or anything that's allowing you to compete in basketball games. Yeah, everybody can hold, you want the positive? Well, again, for 3 quarters, they were in the game. But when it mattered most, they weren't. And it didn't take long for them to get out of it. And it's against the worst team in the league, not named the Houston Rockets. And they thought they were coming in to get a win at home. And they didn't. And LaMelo Ball got hurt. So arguably their best player also was out, and yet you still couldn't find to put him away in a close game. It's inexcusable the way they played the game. Like, Jalen Green shot a good percentage. He took better shots for the most part. Mm-hmm. But he didn't have a whole lot of help, and we still saw too much isolation. And what really, really bothers me the most, too, is when, first of all, whether you just refuse to go inside to Şengün first or do the old Rudy T-type offenses where you start by inverting the offense and getting the ball inside, And when Şengün's capable of having the games he's put together recently, where you know he can score in the post, and they're kind of outmatched in terms of who they're putting against him, when they have to collapse defensively, now your shooters are actually going to get real good shots. And you have guys that can knock down open shots. But where they get in trouble is when they continue to go back to isolation. Nothing chaps my ass more than a guy that beats his man off the dribble, gets inside the paint or to the elbow, and then instead of attacking the rim, decides, well, maybe I can get a better shot if I pull it back out and try this again. Now, the second time around, help is coming from the nearest defender. The penetration is cut off. The shot clock's running down. And you get 10 times worse of a shot. That is so frustrating to watch, and it happens over and over again with this team.
Part of the reason that I think Şengün's having a lot of success right now, though, is because Kevin Porter Jr. is not playing.
I don't think it's a coincidence. I think you're onto something.
The usage matters, right? Like, you play with one basketball. When James Harden was with the Rockets, he's going to have the basketball on his hands all the time. Jalen Green went nuts yesterday, had the basketball in his hands a good amount of time. Alpi Şengün had a really good game. The ball was in his hands quite a bit. Offense kind of goes through Şengün a little bit when Kevin Porter Jr. or Jalen, when Kevin Porter Jr. is not around. You add the usage of a Kevin Porter Jr. And look, when Jalen Green hits the percentage that he shot at yesterday, he's going to have a very good night. But the Kevin Porter Jr. element of throwing him back into the mix all of a sudden takes the ball out of the hands of Jalen Green and Alpi Şengün. This is why I brought up this conversation probably a month ago or so. Are we seeing a Kevin Porter Jr., Jalen Green situation that was, you know, similar to the Monte Ellis, Steph Curry situation, where both the guys dominated the ball, both guys were having good success, but the Warriors realized that they were a better team when the ball was in Steph Curry's hand versus Monte Ellis's hand, and they traded Monte Ellis when it was really controversial. It was not a popular decision because it was a team that went to the playoffs with that backcourt. I think we're seeing the same thing here. I think this offense flows better whenever Kevin Porter Jr. is not playing.
Jeremy, he leads the league in turnovers.
There you go.
If he leads the league in turnovers, he shouldn't be your point guard and have the ball in his hands making decisions on a possession-by-possession basis. And that's something that your analytics department, that your management can tell you if your coaches don't pick up on it. That's something that the communication that should trickle down throughout the organization should help dictate who should have the ball in their hands and play point guard for this team. Kevin Porter can play basketball. Kevin Porter Jr. has basketball skill. There's talent there. But it is not distributing the basketball and being a point guard in the NBA. He can score buckets. He's athletic. He can do things for you. And that's why we both have been on the same page that they need a true point guard, because his best case scenario for this team being successful, if he stays here, is he plays the two and Jalen plays the three. You get a true point guard, and then you get those guys in the spots where they can be most effective scoring the basketball. But with him trying to make decisions and still focus too much on him scoring the basketball himself, it puts your entire team at a disadvantage. And then when you look at all the guys that got to get theirs, we spend way too much time watching isolation. Now, because K.J. Martin's starting to make the three ball, K.J. Martin all of a sudden, after a few possessions, thinks he's got to shoot it or get it on the wing too.
Yep.
The wing is like hell for the Rockets offense, because whoever gets it on the wing, they're just doing their thing all by themselves, and it is going to be a bad possession.
We sound like a bunch of old men, just like, oh.
No, Rockets. I watch basketball.
Right, same. But the Rockets, they don't play team ball. Because, quite frankly, they don't. I think that John Wall, an element to what he had to say the other day. Look, I think John Wall is very jaded towards the Rockets, so he probably, you know, says the worst that he can about the Rockets. But they don't play team ball. Like, you mentioned an example there. I think Kevin Porter Jr., even though he's a point guard that can get assists, you bring up the point that he leads the league in turnovers, doesn't really play that team ball where, okay, this guy's got the hot hand, let me make sure I get a shot off for that guy. They're not always making the best decisions on the offensive end. They're not always taking the best shots on the offensive end. And a lot of that's NBA basketball, but the Rockets do it worse than anybody else relative to the rest of the league. Corey says, did y'all see Jabari completely ignore wide open Alpi on that fast break? I had the Kelvin Sampson show last night, so yeah. I did not see that. Did you happen to catch that?
Yeah, I saw that. I saw a lot of things that were extremely frustrating to me. I saw guys not getting back on defense yet again. And I understand that it's become the norm for the younger players. I can't understand a guy that's trying to get traded, that's trying to find teams. The reason why he played so many minutes in both games in L.A. was they were showcasing his ass, trying to figure out if one of the L.A. teams might be the team that bites to try and somehow redeem Rafael Stone for passing on a late one from the Suns last year and get at least something for Eric Gordon. But Eric Gordon's a guy that has a whole lot of quit in him when he's not getting his shot or if it's not falling. And that's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for him trying to get a job with another team and show that he can play for a competitor, but it's embarrassing because he's got Houston on his chest. What I'm seeing right now is so dysfunctional. It's such a tough brand of basketball to watch, but yet it's perfect for this scenario because it's perfect until the end of the year. Everything's got to change at the end of the year. The same thing that we just said about the Texans, right? Get to the finish line and then press the restart button. And everybody wanted a clean start. They wanted everybody, including Caserio, gone. Well, I don't know if Stone goes or not, but by the end of the year, when they do what they're supposed to do by doing what they continue to do on a nightly basis, and that's lose to get you in the conversation to get Scoot or the VW, then get the hell out of here. Get out of the way and get me some people that are competent and know what they're doing, because someone's got to right this ship, get these kids to understand the right way and the wrong way. And again, I'm not saying that everything that John Wall said a day ago is true, but I think that there's enough of it that he explained to these young kids, hey, look, what you're getting away with here and what you're doing would not be acceptable pretty much across the league.
Yeah, and I think you can take that as two different ways, too. The off-the-court stuff that we talked about yesterday, yep. The on-the-court stuff. Did you hear the latest rumor that Tim McMahon's speculating that the reason that they haven't traded Eric Gordon yet is because James Harden likes playing with him?
Yeah, I've heard that. Because I've heard that Tillman Fertitta would love to have James Harden back.
It's scary.
I've also heard James Harden doesn't want to come back if Rafael Stone's the general manager.
Really?
Yeah.
Knowing,
and let me tell you,
would it be worth it to you if James Harden was back?
No, I don't want James Harden back under any circumstances, and you know this. But no three people bent over backwards and kissed the ass of James Harden more than Rafael Stone, Tad Brown, Daryl Morey. Okay. So it's kind of surprising to me that he doesn't, if that's true, that he doesn't want Stone to be the GM. Because I understand everybody else that doesn't want Stone to be the GM. For a lot of reasons, and a lot of them are finally coming to light, and I couldn't be more excited that there's a redemption tour coming right now. But I don't understand being enamored with James Harden at this point in his career and what he did on the way out to get out of here in the first place, why you'd want him back, and how he could possibly help this team, except for marketing and selling maybe some more tickets. But he's not going to help the development of these kids. He's not going to do anything to help this franchise while this franchise continues to bend over backwards to help him. It's embarrassing that this is the guy you think is a veteran that can actually bring more positivity and success to this franchise.
Would you rather have James Harden or Rafael Stone?
James Harden.
There you go. Blinkers wants James Harden back in Houston.
You gave me a hypothetical. If I had to choose between the two, I know a lot more experience and a lot more positivity that I can get from James Harden than I can from the other guy.
It sounds like you want Harden back. Like, if Harden's back and they let go of Stone, I think you're celebrating. I think you're one of those people that celebrate the press conference.
I'm taking the lesser of two very much evils.
Picking your poison?
Yes.
713-780-ESPN. Blankers wants Harden back. 713-780-3776. Who made the list every Thursday at 2? It's Bad Take Boulevard with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, again, I want to tell you about Doc Linville. Look, this guy gets you results. That's what you want. Whether I'm telling you about him or you're finding about on your own or you're listening to one of the other guys tell you about him, the one thing you want to do is be led down a path to where you get results from whoever is speaking for that said product or that said doctor, in this case, in Doc Linville. I'm telling you, Doc Linville gets results because I'm living proof. John Granato is living proof. Other guys at this station also have seen and reaped the benefits of the NeoGraft procedure with Doc Linville. He's the best in the business, in my opinion. He does it right here in Houston, Texas, and you can reap the benefits too. You can explore the opportunity and see if it's right for you. You don't have to go bald. You don't have to shave your head. If you're losing your hair, there's a solution. It's not sprays and creams and foams that just mask the problem. It's actually a solution. It's your own hair put where you need it from where you have a lot of it and will never lose it. Genetically, you're never going to lose it on the sides and the back. Here's a way for you can get the hair where you need it to be so that you have a full head of hair, you have more coverage area, you have more self-confidence, and you like what you see in the mirror. It's absolutely fantastic. For ESPN listeners, you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. It normally costs $150. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com, schedule an appointment, ask all the questions, find out if it's right for you, the financing, how long the procedure takes, when you see the full results. The thing that always gets me that I always tell you, 95%+ of the follicles moved, stay and grow, and are with you for the long haul. That's why I did it. That's why you can do it too. Check him out today. Tell him I sent you by. He's the best in the business. It's Doc Linville. Go to 975hair.com.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.